Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th day of November, Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Normally, we don't talk about rumors here on Soundbites, but this one comes in a report from Bloomberg News, which is historically pretty accurate, and it pretty much makes sense. According to Bloomberg News, and Apple actually spoke to them about this, Apple plans to introduce next year a low-cost Mac that will, and I quote, compete against Chromebooks. This would, of course, be designed to lure customers away from Google's Chromebooks and entry-level Windows PCs and be made for students, businesses, and casual users who primarily browse the web, work on documents, or conduct light media editing. Apple would also be targeting would-be iPad buyers who might prefer a traditional laptop instead. According to the report, Apple aims to sell the laptop, codenamed J700, for well under $1,000. We'll talk about that in a minute, by using less advanced components. It is currently in active testing at Apple and in early production with overseas suppliers. I'm not quite sure what to make of this. On the one hand, the Chromebook market is robust and expanding, with a projected global market value of $14.7 billion with a B dollars in 2025, growing to $42.9 billion by 2034 at a 12.62% compound annual growth rate. This growth is driven by consistent demand in both education and corporate sectors. Apple used to own the education market, and they clearly want back in. On the other hand, most schools are buying Chromebooks for under $200. Yeah. Many of them are buying them for under $100 a piece.
Because they can buy bulk.
In bulk. Pretty much the only thing you can buy at Apple for that price are AirPods. And they're the low end, the original ones are $179.
$129. Without active noise cancellation.
Right. So you're still, you can't buy earbuds for $100 at Apple. Apple has always sold themselves as the premium brand. Yes, they typically cost more, but they used higher quality hardware to go along with their higher quality software. Are they going to abandon their machined aluminum and titanium cases for extruded plastic? Even if they use an iPhone chip and a cheaper, smaller screen, will they get the price down enough to take on Chromebooks? Not every school buys the lowest end Chromebooks, but not every school can immediately double their laptop budget either. Certainly, there are a couple of million people who absolutely must immediately have every new thing Apple comes out with, and there are certainly more affluent school districts that can afford to double their laptop budget. Of course, Apple could always consider the thing a loss leader. It's not like they can't afford it. Whatever it ends up looking like and however much it costs, one thing's for sure. The competition is good for us, the general consumer. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple to compete against Chromebooks with low-cost Macs. Your choices are, I must have one. Should be pretty interesting. I'll take a look, but I'm skeptical. No, my beloved high-end status symbol is ruined. And will it run Linux? Of course, you can vote in the poll. It's pretty easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. Again, Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And vote there in the poll. Alternately, of course, in addition to that, you can give us a call at 585 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415. We currently have 33 votes, and we could certainly use you to add to the mayhem going on over there.
That's quite an uphill battle for, because kids are so destructive.
Well, there's that.
With the units. And, putting them in those tough books, They got to be able to take a beating because kids will sit there as sure as God made green apples, drop them.
If you've got to replace a $100 laptop, that's not a huge bite.
Right.
You have to replace a $250, $300, $400.
If they
They're saying it's under $1,000, so it could be a $999 laptop.
That's the current laptop. The MacBook Air starts at $999.
Right.
So this is well under $100.
Well, yeah. And the other part of the problem is how low can they go without cannibalizing their own
Even
stuff?
Getting it down to $500, that's still a big nut to swallow.
Right.
Most of the rumors are saying $799, which that's only $200 less.
That's nothing. Schools are not going to spend $800 for a Chromebook, given what Dave just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They only last a couple of years at that.
Yeah, these kids, you know, because they're switched from class to class to class. And, you know, the students, you know, are, you know, switching up stuff in that. And how easy would it be for them to also maintain on a network redoing them, you know?
Well, and that's the other thing. I used to use Apple's management software. Back in the day, it was not good. It was not good. I hope it's better now. But I've also used Google's management
software. And there's a lot of third-party alternatives now, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've used Google's software, and it is great. I mean, it is great. If I were a systems administrator in a school, I would demand that we use Google stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just excellent. And then you know, when I was at RIT, and those kids can afford stuff, okay?
Yeah.
They all carried Chromebooks to classes. They all had, you know, $5,000 gaming rigs in their dorm rooms. But to classes, they took Chromebooks because they knew they could be dropped, they could be broken, they could be lost, they could be damaged. You lose a $200 Chromebook, it's a whole lot less than a $7,000 Alienware, you know, i9 super machine.
That was always in the heyday of computers, that we knew we could sell a big, fast desktop and a portable computer.
Yep.
Because they needed both, and you couldn't get it in one box.
Yep.
And now you can get a fast portable computer and plug a big monitor into it.
Right. Except don't buy Alienware or Razer. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make here is that I don't see Apple certainly isn't going to compete on cost.
Mm-mm.
And like I said, there are a number of schools who will want the prestige. Okay, I don't think it's going to be as many as Apple thinks.
I don't even think it's going to be that big of a bite because
in the Apple community, how much is that? As you mentioned, iPads start at $350.
Right.
Laptops start at $1,000.
Right.
So there's a spot in there for a $600 laptop.
Well,
at the high end, the iPads are $2,000.
Right. But again, Apple has to really do the calculus about how much they're going to cannibalize their own stuff.
Their own market, yeah.
If it's a good enough laptop, would I rather spend $500 or $1,000? That's not really a question that a lot of people are going to answer on the high end.
And that's why Steve Jobs eventually canceled the clone program.
Right.
The idea of that the Mac clones, were supposed to sell into markets that Apple couldn't service. Turns out they were selling into Apple markets. Because it's easier for a clone company to get 1,000 super chips when Apple needs 1,000,000 of the same super chip.
Right.
So I can get
these. Well, and it's going to be a lower end product to begin with. It's going to use, they're saying it's going to use the
A series like in the phone.
A series like in
the phone. But the iPad mini still uses an A17.
Right.
And that's fast enough for most people.
Well, yes. And I'm not saying that. But the point is, now we've got, again, the calculus.
Yeah.
How much do I really need? If what I do is email and surfing the web.
But the students, when it comes to students, it's even less.
Yep.
Because they narrow down the focus. And if I can sit there and, get, say, two laptops for $400 versus one Mac for $500, I'm still $100 ahead, and it still does everything that I need my students to do for their class. They can still send emails, they can surf the web, and they can do their homework.
Yep.
That's what those books are mainly for. They don't have to do a lot of surfing, they don't have to play a lot of heavy games and do all this calculations and everything else. It's very simple stuff for kids.
That's exactly right. And like I said, the students at RIT understood that calculus. They understood it.
Yep.
And they bought low-end Chromebooks just to take notes in class. That's what they were for.
And even a low-end Chromebook, though, for even RIT students will still handle most of their needs.
Well, it's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You can still do your email. You can still surf the web. You can do your social media.
You can still do some calculations and that type of stuff. Some of the MATLAB and all that type of stuff, they'll still handle that or versions thereof.
Right.
The biggest news in the Mac community is that this model was supposed to come out this month, and it's been pushed to spring.
Right.
So both Ming-Chi Kuo and Mark Gurman at Bloomberg, they're the two most reputable rumor leakers.
Right.
They've both said it's going to be spring 26 now.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe.
Well, especially the tariffs and everything else and the chip restraints.
And it's a lot of that, and it's, again, I don't think they're finished with the calculus. I bet there are arguments every day.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
12-inch screen versus 13-inch screen.
Right.
So it goes back to the MacBook Nothing. So we've got the MacBook Air, MacBook Pro.
Right.
There used to be a MacBook Nothing with a 12-inch screen.
Right.
And it was marketed at business professionals who didn't need a lot of power because it was a Core M processor.
Right. And you could sit there staring at a spreadsheet all day long.
Yep.
Making two calculations about just before you went to lunch.
Yep.
It was way more than enough power for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so 12-inch screen for young eyes.
Well, right.
That's one point toward it.
Right.
But sometimes my 14-inch screen isn't big enough. Please. I didn't buy the 16 because it was heavier.
Right. This is a 13-inch screen, and I've got it blown up a little bit.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is we say 14, but I think it's 14.1.
Yeah.
And Apple's 13-inch screens are 13.6.
Yeah.
And they don't round it to 14 because they have a 14.
Right.
So they round it. So this could be a 13.1 or a 13.0 screen.
Or a 12.8.
Well, the iPad used to be 12.9.
Right.
Same screen is now marketed as a 13.
Right. Well, and that's right.
And to zero significant digits, it is.
Right. But that's, we're rounding errors.
Yeah.
You can, if they use some of the old iPad screens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure they've still got a supplier who has all those fabs ready to go. So you could say to them, you know that the last generation screen for the iPad?
Mm-hmm.
Good enough for this. Let's make a billion of those.
Or even the 11-inch iPad screens they're making now. There's three different models of iPad 11-inch.
Right.
Which is extra confusing for salespeople. There's the iPad Nothing, the iPad Air, and the iPad Pro.
Right.
And the guts are different. And more powerful and better speakers. The iPad Pro has an OLED screen, and it's gorgeous. That starts at $1,000. We're not going to see that. So, but maybe, the $350 for that 11-inch iPad screen. So a lot of people do that now. I do that now, but I left my keyboard in the car. $350 for the iPad. You get a keyboard case for $100. $450, that gives you a...
Again, as an individual, that makes sense.
And in the Apple community, that's cheap.
That's cheap in the Apple community. But in a school, you've got to buy 1,000 of them,
mm-hmm.
if you can buy something for 100 and, list price of the Acer Chromebook 313 is, I think, $129. So let's say they're willing to pay $150. You got 1,000 students, that's...
They're going to get a bulk discount anyways.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to, I don't, as a school administrator, as the money guy, the bean counter at a school, and I know a lot of people use that as a derogatory term, but I'm on their side in this one.
Yep.
I'm going to go to the teacher and say, why do you want me to spend three or four times as much money to get essentially the same thing?
End result.
The end result will be identical. Why would I spend four times the amount of money?
Just to sit there and say, oh, I got a Mac.
Right. Just because of that logo on the back, I'll buy you stickers.
The new Macs don't come with stickers anymore.
I know.
Everyone is so mad.
Right?
Well, they went from the multicolor to the white and now nothing.
Well, it's another side business. 3D printing or just label printing of the
Apple logo to stick on the back of your Chromebook.
And the logo doesn't glow on the back of the Mac now.
I know.
So you can't see that on TV.
They've cheaped out the way around. What has happened to Apple?
Somebody got a designer to talk about that, and the screen is too small. If they put the light on the other side to make the Apple logo glow, then the center of your main screen is going to be too bright.
I have a ThinkPad. Thank you again, Joel. I have a ThinkPad, and it's one of the old ones where the dot on the eye lights up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I think those are so cool. Unfortunately, it's on the back of the lid, yeah. So it's not on the keyboard. So.
Yeah.
Did but you ever get a chance to see the bulk charging units? But it's like a rolling cabinet. You put 100 laptops in to charge overnight.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen those. I honestly don't know that Apple is if there are any educators listening and you want to out yourselves.
What are we missing here? You know,
yeah, are we missing? Again, there are going to be some schools, high-end schools, that charge, you know, $50,000 a year for their students who are going to be able to say, we have the prestige, we have the Mac Chromebooks.
But the prestige plus, I think, is going to weigh in quite a bit, too. Even those higher-end schools, we buy nothing but... They're also, with the economic times that we're having right now, they're looking ways to cut budgets.
Yeah, in this economy?
Every school district, I don't care how well off you are, to the lowest one, and anything in between, they're all looking to find ways to cut money. Right. And if I can buy two units
for the price
for $400 versus buying one for $500, and that's saying if they can even get it to $500.
Right.
Our store used to be in the Honeyway Falls Lima School District.
Right.
And HFL decided 15 years ago to buy Macs for all the students.
Yep.
A lot of the parents were mad at Jackie, who owns our store, for convincing the school to spend that much money. I didn't have anything to do with that. I didn't even know what was going to happen. We never got a cut of that.
Right.
Apple Education is a completely different part of Apple. They don't talk to us.
That's Apple.
We can't talk to them.
Like you say, corporation, not your shop.
Right. Yeah. Right. But yeah, I mean, and think, okay, let's talk theft.
Hmm.
How many kids have had their, back in the day when they were first new, how many kids had their phones stolen?
Yep.
How many kids had their laptops stolen?
Yep.
Now, you know, I don't know that anybody's going to bother to steal a $100 Chromebook.
Yeah.
Maybe, but not a lot. However, a $500 Apple book, whatever they're going to call it, probably they'll bring back the iBook name.
Oh, they could.
Yes, they could.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, if I'm a thief and I got two laptops sitting here and I can only take one of them, I'm going to take the $100 one or the $500 one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's no brainer right there.
Although, fortunately, theft of all computers in general has dropped down because both Apple and Google and Android have the Find My feature.
Right. But that doesn't stop some people.
Right. And every now and then we'll get someone who they bought a used computer on eBay and it's locked to somebody's Apple ID. Nothing we can do about it. You have to go back to the person you bought. We assume person you bought it from and get them to unlock it. Oh, he said he didn't have the password.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing we can do.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
so whoever
so sad. It's too bad.
But there were also several stories I read about schools where kids would steal their own laptop and sell it to someone, and then report their laptop stolen so they could get another one. And I remember one story about this one kid who ended up getting arrested because he had a stolen laptop. And said, "Well, you know, my friend gave it to me." Well, he shouldn't have. That was stolen. But my friend gave it to me.
Right.
Didn't
right.
quite understand. It's a stolen unit. You can't keep it.
Right. No, it's a look, I think it's great. I think it's Apple really wants back into the education market. It's the Jesuit thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give me your child before he's seven, he's mine for life. I get that. I absolutely get that. The problem is they can't do it at the high end. I don't see that working out.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do it with a lot of red ink bleeding.
On the other side of the coin, and a very strange catch-22, is a lot of school districts, including the state of New York, so every school in New York State, there's a distraction-free law that has been recently passed. So students cannot use electronic devices, their phones, smartwatches, tablets, during class.
Right, bell to bell.
Right. But
when you walk in the door, you give them your phone. When you walk out of the door, you get your phone back. It's bell to bell.
What about the school issued iPad?
Exactly. How do you?
Yeah, but they can control that. Right. I mean, and they can lock that down.
How quick is it that students figure out how to bypass those locks and get to something else?
Yeah. Well, again, like I said, I'm sure that Apple's software, and if somebody has experience with it, let us know. But when I used it, it was terrible. And it didn't do any locking out. It didn't do any of that stuff. With Google, you can say, you know what? Between the hours of 7 a.m. and 4 p.m., I know it's like 8 to 3 now or 9 to 3 or whatever the hell it is, you can only go to these websites.
Mm-hmm.
And then from, you know, 7 to 9 p.m., you can go to these websites. And at 9 o'clock, it locks you out. Go to bed.
Yep.
You have school in the morning. So there's a whole range of things that need to be addressed, and I don't know that Apple has the.
Do they really want to be bothered with that?
I don't know that they have the willingness to cannibalize their own line, because you know that there are going to be a whole bunch of people who think, all right, so if I can get a laptop for half the price,
mm-hmm.
that still says Apple, I'm good with that. So how do they cripple it so that they don't cannibalize it? I just don't see it. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Who came in?
I have a AI type question, I hope, here.
Okay.
I have a report that was PDF'd to me that has like 46 pages to it. Is there a way to put that into AI or one of the AI machines, if you will, and turn that into like an audiobook?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them, and I can't remember the name offhand. I saw one for podcasts where it actually uses different voices for different speakers. Your computer may already have a text-to-speech program built in.
I'm not sure about that. I'm using Linux now.
There you go. Well, there are several things, but
PDFtospeech.com.
PDFtospeech will do it. There's a lot of audio generation. Google's Notebook LM.
Whisper, that's
can
what it
do
is.
That. Whisper can do it. Speechify can do it. Wondercraft AI, Jellypod, Amazon's Polly can do it. So there are a bunch that can do that. What's the other one called? HeyGen, I think it's called. HeyGen. G-E-N, HeyGen, which will take any content and turn it into a podcast.
No, I'd like to maybe try the Google Notebook stuff. I've looked at that a little bit and trying to decide what I could use it for and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this will do that. So you can throw it a PDF and tell it turn it into a podcast. It'll do that, and then you can listen to it.
And Whisper is from OpenAI, and I know several people are using that for their podcasts. And they have a local LLM you can run on your own computer. So that's a lot of the web-based ones. You're going to have to upload your PDF to the web, and who knows what they do with it at their end.
Right.
Right, right. Okay, sounds like a good idea. I just wanted to throw that out there and see if there was anything you guys recommended.
Although, there's nothing like a real voice reader. There's several lawsuits that have been put in place by the Actors Union and Writers Unions about audiobooks that are being AI read and not using real narrators.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not looking to do anything with it. I'm just looking to, you know, 46 pages would be nice just to listen to.
Sure, while you're driving or whatever, as opposed to sitting and reading. You can also get the podcast. You can also get the AI to give you a summary.
Okay.
Yeah,
so you can say, here's this PDF, summarize it for me. Give me the high points.
That's a good idea, too.
There was a commercial where someone sent like three bullet points into the AI and said, expand on that and make a five-page paper. And then they did, and the AI did, and they emailed it off to the boss, and the boss looked at it, oh, geez, send that into the AI. Summarize that into 3 bullet points.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I know you're coming up to the half hour here.
Yeah, so, we are. Thanks, Rich.
Have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, there's a lot you can do with AI these days. There's just some really amazing capabilities that are out there. We don't use most of them, and some of them you pay for, but there are a lot of free ones. Notebook LM is a freebie, and it works pretty well to turn something into a podcast. In fact, you can have two separate voices talking to each other in the podcast. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415. We'll be right back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Will all the way from Hampton, Virginia on the line. What's up, Will?
Not too much. How you fellas doing this Saturday afternoon?
It's a beautiful day in my neighborhood.
Same here. I looked at the poll of the week with great amusement and followed up the discussion as well and was amused. And the way I see it, here's the problem for Tim Cook and company. Over the years, as we all know, they went over $1 trillion in valuation in the mobile computing space.
Right.
Now, to try and mimic that success when trying to maneuver into space occupied by Chromebook is going to be a challenge because so much of what you get in a MacBook Air is optimized for a non-computer user. And for them to try and get to a price point that's affordable like a Chromebook, I applaud them if they can do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, they're at, what, $3 billion now? That's their...
No, they're
trail. $3 trillion.
Trillion.
They popped over $4 trillion for a little bit.
Yeah. But they're at $3 trillion. And so, look, here's the real issue. They could sell we all know that when Apple brings out any product, the Apple cult buys them immediately, everything. So you'll have, like, what are you doing there, Will?
Yeah, what's going on the background, Will?
Oh, there's a lot of noise on your, yeah.
Are
you on a treadmill?
I plugged in my headset. It's not a Bluetooth, but I can unplug it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. But Apple, you know, 2 million people will buy any Apple product immediately. The problem is 2 million people buying an Apple product is a loser for Apple. That's you know, anybody else, we sold 2 million of them. Excellent. Apple, we only sold 2 million of them? That's terrible. I don't see this becoming a viable product for them. I understand they want in the space, but at this point, unless they really do come out with a $200 laptop that is everything people want in an Apple product.
They can't do it.
If they could, I could see them selling them. But you're right.
Well,
you're right.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, experience for an Apple computer is optimized for the non-computer user.
Yep. And they're not designed to be what Google. One of the things that Google did was they were laser focused. Right? They said, what do we want this machine to do? We want it to surf the web. Okay, done. That's what it did. Now, later on, they added a Linux component. Later on, you know, they added the Android component. But when they first brought it out, what we want is a web browser in a box.
They realized how important the web was going to be.
They realized how important the web was going to be, and they realized that that's all most people needed.
Yep.
Most people, when they open up their laptops, all they do is run a browser.
And you get your mail, you get your photos, you look at other people's websites, you go to Facebook, you go to Spotify.
And because of the Google Drive, you can do word processing and spreadsheets. And most people don't do anything so large that they need anything more than Google Drive. So you had everything you needed right in that little box. When people buy Apples, they expect to run all those video editors and audio editors and high-end games.
That it comes with.
That it comes with.
Yeah.
And those things are just not available at a $200 price point.
And the other key point, though, is that it's well known.
Calm down when he's not talking.
One of the other things that is well known with the Chromebook is that you don't get the spyware, you don't get the malware, you don't get the viruses as much as you might even get with a Mac.
Right. Well, and that's another thing. Don't forget, with Chromebooks, when you run them, they run in a little walled garden. And when you go to upgrade them, it's a serious piece of security that they've done here. You cannot easily, and so far nobody's done it.
Yeah, nobody's done it yet.
You cannot corrupt the operating system. That's not true of Macs. So how do they handle that?
Yeah.
You know, it's
double-edged sword there.
It's, you know, if all you're looking at is the logo on the back, then Apple will be a winner. But if you look at kind of everything else, you're gonna land in favor of Chromebooks if that's your market, right? And for students, for schools, Chromebooks are the market.
And then Chromebooks basically took the market away from Apple in the first place.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And they did it the right way. They said, what do people need to do? Let's give them that and no more. And therefore, how low can we get this price?
That was the thin client.
It was a thin client,
because all of your processing is done on the web
at
the other end.
That's exactly right. Yep. That is exactly right. And, you know, Wise had thin clients and a couple Wang had thin clients. But those were for businesses. You had to build your own back end and populate it and run it and blah, 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 blah. Google said, you know what? Buy this little $129 box and you have everything you need.
You're good to go.
Boom, done. You're right, Will. I just don't see how Apple's going to manage it. I just don't.
You all set then?
Yep. That was my 2 cents.
Okay, my friend.
Thanks, Will.
Take care.
Yeah. Enjoy your day.
You too.
All right, bye.
Yeah, I don't see it. I just don't. I mean, you know, God bless them. If they make it, I honestly hope they do, because the competition can only be good for everybody.
But I don't see it
for
happening.
I don't see it.
Maybe another third-party company within the PC world.
Now, if Apple turned around and said, clones are back, we will sell you our reduced operating system for you to put in your own boxes, make your own Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that selling.
Yeah.
I could see that selling. But Apple wants, you know,
the whole pie.
The whole pie. And I don't see, are they gonna bring out a plastic Chromebook?
Yeah, that's a big,
yeah,
big,
I don't,
rub? Concern? No. What's the word I want?
I don't know.
Nobody knows if Apple's going to abandon the aluminum finish and go back to plastic like they used to have.
Well, and can you put out an extruded aluminum or a machined aluminum case for the same price you can put out an extruded plastic case?
No way.
You cannot.
There's stories that Apple has every single CNC mill in Asia booked, milling out these cases.
Sure, and the reality is that each one of those probably costs more than an entire Chromebook at their end to build.
And they're going to cost more
imports. And so if Apple now suddenly decides, who at Apple is going to make that decision? It's not going to be Tim Apple.
Mm-hmm.
To say, you know what, we're going plastic. You know what, we're going low-end screen.
It used to be.
We're not going to have the sexy, super wonderful keyboard. We're going to put out a piece of junk. I don't see them doing it.
Mm-mm. It used to be plastic computers, the iBook,
right,
in the consumer market, and the aluminum one, and titanium originally,
right,
in the pro market. And all the consumers wanted that cool-looking pro titanium.
Yep.
And then they stopped making plastic computers.
Well, right. But I think, you know, and I'm going to call it the iBook until we know differently.
Yeah.
I think the iBook cannot be anything but plastic.
Yep.
And that again, now you're going to start cannibal, because most people are going to look at it and say, all I do is web and mail. Yeah. Why am I spending $1,000?
Yep.
Okay, I get the extruded, machined aluminum case,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to the extruded
plastic.
Yeah,
it's sexy looking.
Yeah.
It's sexy looking, but it's still got that Apple logo on the back, which is what I'm buying.
Yeah.
And the very first iBook was geared and targeted at schools.
Yes.
It had a handle in the back.
Yes, I remember that.
We jokingly call it the toilet seat.
I had a Bell & Hollow Apple II that had a handle on the back.
Yep.
So it could be carried around. So yeah, I just don't see it. You know, I hope so, but I don't see it. All right, back to the news. While you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, it's 966-5299, toll free 800-790-0415. It's been a week for Microsoft. Where to begin? Microsoft has confirmed a known issue that is preventing users from quitting the Windows 11 Task Manager after installing the October 2025 optional update. There are widespread user reports that the Task Manager continues to run in the background even after quitting the app using the close button, resulting in various performance issues, including stuttering and CPU hangs. Every time you open Task Manager, a new instance is created while the old one continues to run in the background. If you do this often enough, it can stack up many hidden TaskManager.exe processes, consuming system resources and potentially slowing down your PC even more than Windows already slows it down. Microsoft doesn't have a fix yet, but you can, from the command line as admin, run the task kill command. Command line? What is this, Linux? There was a long-standing bug that would cause the
update... No, this is DOS.
This is DOS.
This is DOS.
Where there was also a long-standing bug that would cause update and shutdown option to instead restart the PC. This fix was included in the same optional update that unfortunately introduced the new task manager bug, so you give one, you get one. Speaking of updates, installing the October 2025 updates may trigger incorrect end-of-support warnings on Windows 10 systems with active security coverage or still under active support. Microsoft noted that this is only a cosmetic issue, since all affected devices, including those with the active with an activated ESU license, the extended use extended security updates license, will continue to receive security updates. So just ignore the warning. What a great thing to teach Apple users. Windows users, I mean. Yeah, go ahead. Ignore the warnings. They're fine. Just move on.
And this coming Tuesday the 11th is Patch Tuesday for
Patch
November.
Tuesday. Microsoft has also warned, that, which you can ignore, that some systems may boot into BitLocker recovery after installing that same October update. If this happens, you'd better have your BitLocker recovery key handy on a different device so that you can get at it. You can get at it from your Microsoft account, assuming you used one to install your copy of Windows. If you used a local account, I hope you wrote down that 48-digit key when you encrypted your drive. To determine if your drive is encrypted, open an admin command prompt and type in manage-bde for BitLocker disk encoding, --status. Command line, what is this, Linux?
Yeah, really.
For those of you who use Phone Link to transfer photos from your phone to your computer, that's going away. Microsoft is encouraging all users to use File Explorer instead. It's unclear whether Microsoft will migrate more of Phone Link's functionality to default Windows applications, but this reduction in Phone Link capabilities doesn't bode well for the app's future. But our future looks pretty bright due to your generosity during the pledge drive. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. So even in Windows, you cannot avoid the command line to fix problems. Microsoft, we've said this for the longest time, Microsoft has killed most of their QA, quality assurance group. It's probably all. It's certainly most.
Mm-hmm.
And quality has gone significantly down since they did that. And This is what has been causing many, many of the problems that we have now. And to see these kinds of problems, particularly when they fix one problem and it causes another, that's just lousy programming, lousy administration, lousy QA. It's just lousy. I'm getting more and more disgusted. This is a multi-billion dollar company. You would think they could spend $50 and bring back their quality assurance team.
Yeah.
And actually make a product that they should be proud of. It just annoys me. And this is the thing, you know, people say to me, oh, you hate Apple. I don't hate Apple. I do hate Apple. Google. No.
Microsoft. They're all the same.
They're all the same nowadays. It doesn't matter.
They blur.
They say, you hate Microsoft. I don't hate Microsoft, except that I hate that they are so friggin' cheap. They've got billions of dollars sitting around doing nothing.
And they hit a $4 trillion market cap, too.
They have a $4 trillion market cap. Why are they not spending a couple? Because they're a publicly traded company.
Shareholders.
And their customer is the shareholder, not you. And if your inconvenience, your inability to decrypt your drive, your inability to kill a task means that their shareholders get an extra penny a share, well, you lose. That's just the way that works.
Mm-hmm.
And it annoys me. And they're all doing it. They're all publicly traded companies. I get it, but I don't like it. And that's the thing that most bothers me. It's just ridiculous. I seem to be on a rant today. I'm Uncle Dave today myself.
There you go.
So yeah, it doesn't make sense to me that they would do this. Why is there no quality assurance? It doesn't cost that much. In the grander scheme of things,
it doesn't cost
that much. It's a rounding error.
They're letting AI do it. And
that works.
Yeah, and we're seeing it, how well that works.
But they've gotten so big, I think that's what's caused them to not care that much.
Well, and that's part of the problem.
Because it's billions of people around the world that are using Windows.
And it's trillions of lines of code.
Yeah.
And I get that. No human being can understand anything more complex than a lever. So when you've got, a billion lines of code, nobody's going to understand the interaction in that. I get that. I absolutely get that. But, and the fact that, I mean, take a look at your Windows systems and the inconsistencies in the GUIs.
Yeah.
This team does it this way, this team does it that way, this team does it in a third way. And it's ridiculous.
Well, it's just like I told you, that ham software that I use, the guy had it with Microsoft Access. Because they kept making changes here and there, and then it would affect the way other products would work. Because they changed this, and now all of a sudden what was working fine is now messed up. And he finally said, you know what? To hell with it. He took 2.5 years, had his people rewrite the program from the ground up using SQLite.
Yep.
He came out with it on the 27th. And I got to tell you, I've got over 57,000 records in my database. Now with SQLite,
they fly.
It is unbelievable.
Yep.
I can do a search. Bam. Everything is right there.
Well, and here's the thing. It's not unbelievable because I've been using SQLite for decades. And I know how fast it is. The problem is the Jet engine is crap.
Yeah.
And it was always
still using Jet?
Well, yes, they are. That's what underlies Access. And here's the thing. Back in the day, you had two, and again, we go to cannibalization. You had two products. You had the Jet engine for the small user, tiny databases on your computer, and you had Microsoft SQL Server for your big databases for the organization.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to make the Jet engine very good, because people might use that instead of spending the money on SQL Server.
True.
So the Jet engine was always hobbled to begin with. And now you see that when you have 57,000 records, it takes half an hour to deal with it. Whereas you put it into SQLite, by the time you press enter, your answer is there.
And the other big feature that I liked with the old software, I had to have, because I have it on two different computers.
Yep.
I had to have a database there and a database over there. Now, and they wouldn't talk to each other and update each other. Now with SQLite, I put one out on the cloud, and I point the two computers to the one out of the cloud, and they're constantly updating.
Always up to date.
So whether I go on this one or this one, I can pull it up, and I see all the records.
And that, A, tells you that that database is always up to date.
Yeah.
You know, and it's only in one place. And B, it's real easy to back that up.
Oh, yeah. And I got it on the cloud, which I don't worry about because I... one of my Google accounts, you know, email accounts, I got 15 free gig sitting there. So I put one there and then the backup's on another one.
Yep, and that's exactly right. And it works perfectly and you know it's backed up and you know you've got it. You don't have to worry about are they in sync.
It's fast. It's,
and you're done. Yeah. No, it's look, the Jet engine was a great idea
33 years ago.
33 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it was a great idea at the time because it was, at the time, the only inexpensive individual user database that was easy to use. If FileMaker was good and DBase was great, but they were not as easy to use as
Yeah, I remember
Access.
The old DBase days. Yeah. Oh, wow.
They were not as easy to use as Access.
FileMaker had the visual appeal to the designers, but not the back end power that Access.
Yeah.
We always wanted Claris and Microsoft to get together and do the FileMaker front end with the Access back end, and
never happened.
Never happened.
But again, they hobbled it so that they didn't cannibalize SQL Server.
Mm-hmm.
And now, and they haven't changed it in 33 years.
Well, that's why we're so excited now with this.
Well, you can upsize from Jet to SQL.
Yes.
Upsize is their word.
Yes. Ish. It's not as easy as you think it is.
Yeah.
Well, going to the SQL, though, and the database there. Now, like I said, it just came out on the 27th, and he was already getting requests to do this and this. Because they did it in SQL, it just came out today, a list of over 30 different updates that he was doing just because he said it's not going to take us months and all that to do this stuff, folks, because now we have it in SQL. And he had this whole list that he says, go ahead, search it. He says, we're going to be coming out every 5 to 10 days now with updates to correct stuff that you folks are finding for us. We can react that fast because of taking the time and redoing it in SQL.
Yep.
SQL came out 52 years ago.
Yes. But it was an IBM product, and they put an entire room full of people together and said, make it work right.
Yeah.
And they did.
Mm.
As opposed to the three people at Apple who sat in a room and said...
Microsoft.
At Microsoft. Why do I keep... I don't know.
Because we're still on the old Apple notebook.
We're still on the old iBook. But, half a dozen people sitting in a room at Microsoft being told, make a database. It doesn't have to be good.
No.
I mean, the whole... Never mind. It just has to work enough.
Like I said.
Because if we get people to use it, then we can upsell them SQL Server.
And that's gotten them into trouble. There are several federal investigations. What was that big security problem that everyone dumped and Microsoft gave the government antivirus program? Was it the antivirus or their threat management software?
Threat management software, yeah.
And then a year later said, okay, your free trial's over. Now give us $100 million.
Right.
And the government said, what?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so what now? The FTC is investigating them for that, and investigating them for their Azure cloud storage monopoly that they're tweaking prices. So once you pick a company for your threat management or your CRM or whatnot, it's very, very hard to switch.
Yep.
Yeah, but Microsoft for so long got the name over the past, say, 20 years, well known for bringing out a product, supporting it for a little while, and then saying, oh, sorry, we're not using it anymore. Like, say, their Microsoft Money.
Right.
Boom. I got everybody to go on it, and then they dumped it.
Yep. Well, Google There's does the a same lot thing. Apple does the same thing. They, you know, and it's all bean counters. Now I'm using it derogatorily. Thank you.
Yeah.
it's all bean counters. We're not making enough money on this product. Kill it.
Yeah. Don't want to support it. And
the shareholders are unhappy. And that's just the way that works. That's the way it's all done now. So, yeah. All right, listen. That music tells us this first hour of the show is done. So I will try to lower my blood pressure. But don't go too far. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, and a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-CHAZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. You know, Will can't be the only person listening in from Virginia. You get a toll-free number there, people. Give us a call, and we will talk to you right here. But we're going to take a quick break now, take a little bio break, get yourself a beverage, soft or hard, I don't care, I'm not judging. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites, right here, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Now I'll actually read Apple news and see if I can...
Now you can say Microsoft.
Now I can say Microsoft all the time. Voice assistants from tech brands like Google and Amazon have recently undergone significant enhancements powered by AI. Meanwhile, Apple's ambitions to catch up to its competitors with Siri continue to drag on. Facing challenges in developing a conversational AI chatbot over the past several months, Apple reportedly considered partnering with other AI companies. Apparently, Apple has decided to pay $1 billion with a B dollars annually to Google to use Gemini to power Siri's next generation. Apparently, Apple will use a custom version deployed on its own private cloud compute architecture rather than being hosted on Google servers. Apple has reportedly already allocated resources for this purpose. Apple has launched its App Store on the web, offering a central hub where we can browse through different categories of apps across all of the company's devices. Now, when you navigate to apps.apple.com, you'll see the revamped interface instead of a web page that just contains information about the App Store. There's no way to download apps from the App Store on the web, however. Apple just gives you the option to share an app or open it directly inside the App Store installed on your device. After several weeks of testing, Apple has released the final version of the 26.1 update to its various operating systems. Those include iOS, iPadOS, macOS, watchOS, tvOS, visionOS, and the HomePod operating system, which is probably actually called HomePodOS.
Just HomeOS.
Oh, just HomeOS, sorry. All of which switched to a new unified year-based version numbering system this fall. One of the biggest challenges across most of the platforms is a new translucency control for liquid glass that tones it down without totally disabling the effect. Apple has decided to expand its empire. In addition to hardware, software, and streaming entertainment with Apple TV Plus and Apple Music, Apple has slowly but surely broken into the most lucrative television market of all, live sports. Oliver Schusser, Apple's vice president of Apple Music, Apple TV Sports, and Beats, has a rather strong opinion about the current sports world. If you're a sports fan today, it kind of sucks, Schuster said. First of all, for any given team or sport, you need to sign up for a bunch of different services. Now he wants to consolidate much of that under the Apple brand. They've already got a deal with Major League Soccer and Formula One Racing. We'll see what sport they engulf next. Of course, they're also talking about AI-generated commentary, so we may soon hear about a Formula One car kicking a 200-yard field goal into a soccer net in space. We're still earthbound, so you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. You know, I'm not that much of a sports fan, but I would absolutely watch AI-generated commentary on a sport just to watch how badly it gets done.
Yeah.
Goal!
Right, it could go on for days. All right, to the phones. I'm changing that. Okay. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. What's up, Brian?
Gentlemen!
Who came in?
Hey, enjoy AI while you can still recognize it, because it's in its infancy, and you know as well as I do, it's going to get to a point where you won't be able to separate it any way, shape, or form.
It's already scary.
Already, yeah. And we're getting
it.
The Judge Mehta decision on Google's search monopoly basically came down to everyone's using AI for search now. We don't need to do anything about you.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, we're real close to the uncanny valley, so it's going to get crossed any day now.
And finding, like, I'm a documentary freak, and finding documentary and something that, like, piques my interest that's narrated by AI,
yeah.
It can be so frustrating. Because, like, this is a great subject. This is fun. This is cool. And it's just like, oh, my God, put another battery in the thing. I don't know.
Yeah, when I watch, like, a YouTube video or a documentary or something that's got an AI-generated voice, I turn it off. I'm just not interested.
The mispronunciation is really annoying.
Oh, I hate that.
Well, some of it can be kind of funny. I mean, for a little while, but after a while, but that's going to go away, man. You and I both know it. So
yep.
That will be repaired, and you won't even know. You know, maybe you could have. I don't know. But anyway, we've had a computer Armageddon here in Pavilion.
Oh no! What happened?
Oh my gosh! I know. We had two instances this week after months and months of just flawless behavior. My Linux Mint box. I run a beater old used computer in my garage to listen to you guys, and it's a beautiful thing. I've had it for decades, and all of a sudden my hard drive started to fill up, and I couldn't open programs on it. I do a little bit of audio editing and stuff like that, and it got slower and slower. It started filling up with stuff.
Huh.
So, okay, I figured, all right, I know. I was like, no, I went online. I couldn't find anything to do with it. So I went out and got another hard drive, which I needed to expand anyway.
Sure.
And put another version of Linux on it. And it's fine, but my one SSD hard drive, I go to clear it, it formatted, and it worked great, and now everything's working great again. And I never had a problem like this at all. You ever heard of a hard drive just getting packed with just cruft?
Yes. You're talking about an SSD here, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's the way SSDs work. When you buy an SSD, let's say it's a terabyte drive. They call it provisioning. They provision a terabyte on the drive, but it might be a 1.3 terabyte drive or 1.4 terabyte drive, because every time you write to an SSD, you damage it. That's how you write to it. And so over time, individual cells get so badly damaged that the system takes them offline and moves the data to an unused, undamaged cell.
Sure.
So the problem is when those cells start to fill up and when they get bad enough, you start running out of space no matter what you think you're doing. Run out of spare things, and so you run out of space to add new stuff. Then
here's the curve.
Yeah.
The curveball was, because I've heard you guys discuss this a million times. I love you guys. I listen to you every week.
Thanks.
I'm also off and on a member too, not right now, but I am occasionally. but the thing is, that was teasing me about this is, I took my new drive, reinstalled Mint. I was able to remove any data that I wanted to save off of the old drive, and that's all safe and happy. And I had backups, the usual thing. But I formatted the original drive, and it's fine. It checks fine. It's mm-hmm. I've got yep. all 500. Mm-hmm.
So what happens is when you format it, it goes through it and says, oh, these cells are dead. We'll throw them away.
Remarks it.
But we've still got a terabyte of good storage here, and now we're going to reorganize it and make it all clean and neat and good.
Oh.
So now you can use it again.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, excellent.
Well, it's like doing spring cleaning on your closet. You know, right. You go in there and pull everything out and then put it back in an organized fashion.
And it all fits, and now you've got extra room.
Yep.
I've also
that's exactly what happened. I was surprised. I'm sorry, David. I'm sorry, Steve. I didn't mean to step on you.
No, sorry.
No, it's okay.
I've also posted a link to a program called TreeSize that will scan your whole hard drive and show you the size of all the folders, and you can see if there's a folder that has gotten too big. Maybe a log file went nuts,
right,
and filled up your drive with log entries
or temp files or whatever.
Right.
There was that, but I thought that Linux had overcome all that nonsense with that kind of payload and stuff.
But Linux itself has. It depends on the programs you're running, right? If you've got a program in the back. Well, so for example, let's say you're running a program that's finding bad sectors.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be scanning that drive and saying, this sector's bad, this sector's bad, this sector's bad. Mm-hmm. That's going to end up being a huge log file.
Okay, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time worrying about this, and I don't use this machine for anything critical whatsoever.
Right.
I have another question too. I have a Lenovo. I call myself Mr. Magoo when no one's listening because I dropped this thing and I landed right on the plug.
Sure, you did.
It broke something. I admit it. The cat didn't do it. Whatever. No, I did it. And unfortunately, this machine will not run powered or on battery anymore since I did this. It's an older machine. It's not worth me fixing. So I ordered another exact same duplicate online used. Can I take my Windows 11 drive out of my Lenovo ThinkPad and plug it into a clone, the same exact thing? Probably not.
It's not going to be the exact same thing. I can guarantee you that.
Okay.
Well, you could use the drive and then reinstall
Windows
on it, yeah.
Yeah, reinstall Windows over Windows. But the thing of it is, though, is even though it's the same model and that of Lenovo, it's not going to be the same motherboard. It's going to have a different chipset on it and a different version. I can almost guarantee it because just even in production, as they're making these things, you know, all of a sudden midstream, all of a sudden they can get a different batch that come in and now have this chipset on it versus the other one.
Right. So what happens is Microsoft is so worried about you being a thief,
mm-hmm.
a common, rotten, low down, dirty thief.
Which I am.
Which, okay, that's. I won't argue because I don't know. They assume that you're going to try to steal Windows. So the first thing Windows does is it takes a fingerprint of your system and says, that is the system that this version of Windows will run on.
Yep, the license is tagged to this one.
Right, and if you change...
That was my question.
Yeah, and if you change anything, we've seen instances where people added RAM and Windows stopped working.
Yep.
Then, they have a process where you can call the licensing bureau and type in a 100-digit code, and they type back a 50-digit code, but it's frustrating.
Yeah, but that's so their base assumption is that you are a thief, so they make it very difficult, if not actually impossible. So you could call the licensing Microsoft licensors and say, "Look, here's what I did." What they will tell you, I guarantee this. That's a different machine. It requires a different Windows license.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because you don't buy Windows. You buy a license for Windows.
You're right.
And that license is not to you. It is to the hardware.
So this laptop, the one that I broke, this has, it's the next iteration of SF. It's the, and I'm catching up slowly with this, but it's not really a formal hard drive. It's more of a series of sticks. You see them, you know, it doesn't have a spinning or an SSD in it.
So it's got an NVMe.
We sometimes call it a blade drive.
Right, blade drive.
Yeah.
So can I pair it? Can I like do like C&D like we used to? or you know, CMB drive.
Partition, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely you can. So you can, okay, well, oh, no, no, hold on. It depends on how many NVMe slots are in the other laptop.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, because you've got to have some sort of hard drive in there now, right? In the new one.
I don't have a new one yet. But
when you get the new one, if it has an empty NVMe slot, then you can absolutely move that drive to it. And then use it, you know, assuming that it's not BitLockered, right, that it's not encrypted, you would be able to then read all the data off of that.
Otherwise, you're going to have to put it in like a USB case and hook it up to one of the USB ports on the
right. And so, and that's what I did with one of mine. I pulled an NVMe stick out of a dead laptop. I bought a $30 carrier, plugs into the USB port. Done.
That was going to be exactly my next connection because I do have a couple universal. You know, SATA, APA, the old school, you can plug anything into it.
Mm-hmm.
Even IDE.
Yep.
That actually works pretty cool.
Yeah. So if you can, if there's nothing internal, then you can still hook it up externally at least to move your data over.
Yep.
That's fantastic. I never gave that a second thought. I appreciate that. Yeah, because I was going to explore around and then when I broke, so I broke it some more opening it, and now it's really extra broke. So I double broke it.
In there.
And then this new one, so I don't want to take the new one, which comes in with a reasonable warranty it's used, but I didn't want to go cracking that open and pulling that all apart, until that warranty expires, then I'll break that one again too. So.
Right. Yeah, but you can buy the carrier. I think mine was $30 on Amazon, I think. It might have been less.
So one of the things you have to watch for is depending on how big yours is, there are four or five different sizes of drive.
Right.
And so if you buy a enclosure for a short drive and you have a long drive.
Well, one I got actually has, it's for the longest drive.
Which is 2280.
Which is a 2280. And then you can, there's a little latch that holds it in instead of a screw.
Mm-hmm.
And that latch can be moved to different holes.
Yep.
Depending on
slider position.
So you can move it to different holes depending on the size of the NVMe. It's very cool.
So it doesn't get bounced around and comes loose.
Yeah. So I would check that out. You know, you know what size it is. Because you've already broken the machine in, you've broken into the machine and found it. So
I'm gonna bring it some more, taking it apart again. So that's fine.
There you go. And so pull that drive out, and you can just buy a carrier for it and plug it into a USB port. Now, pay attention, because with the machine that you're getting, if it has a USB-C, that would be best because you can transfer data pretty quickly that way. If it has USB-A, then you want it to be
3.1 or 3.2 is even better.
3.1 or 3.2 is better. But, you know, the USB port would be blue, not black. And if you want that, then when you buy the carrier, make sure you buy one with the correct plug on the end of that.
Okay, I'll be sure to do that. Yeah, because I was surprised. One of the reasons I took it apart was, I'm going to try to maybe take a shot at replacing the. It's not beyond me to try to repair something, and back in the day when we had tube radios and like transistor radios, I spent my entire teenage years trying to electrocute myself. But this thing here, how could you possibly? I opened it up and I went, no way. How could you possibly, especially with my old 65-year-old hands? Desolder that with all the little.
You can do it. It's just very difficult, and a lot of people don't. And of course, that's part of the right to fix movement, right?
Yeah, there's some amazing YouTube videos of people doing that, and it's just ridiculous how I want to see
But there's a movement that says most machines are not user repairable, and there is a movement called Right to Repair, which says all machines should be user repairable. You should be able to fix it.
Exactly. And Steve, how about that? I'm sure you've seen it. How about that guy that repairs those Alienware laptops?
Yep.
Have you seen it?
The greatest technician in the world, or whatever he calls it.
My brother.
I want to see the 100 machines they screwed up before they filmed that one where they do it in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well, my brother can sit there and take, like, those 100-pin connectors. unsolder them and resolder them in a blink of an eye.
God bless him. But
of course, that's what he does for a living,
right,
with
exactly.
His job, doing boards and everything else.
And he's got the equipment, and he's got the knowledge, and he's, you know, he's
he
got
is
the
very proficient. Many a year doing over 50 years doing that.
That's why, you know, that's when somebody says, "Why does it cost so much?" I said, "You know, it took you 10 minutes." No, it took me 30 years.
Yeah. Well, that's like now, because he is semi-retired. They says, "Well, you got to come back and do this." And he goes, "Yeah, I'm semi-retired. Here's what you're going to pay me."
That's
well,
right.
We don't know. Well, okay. They came back and said, "Okay."
I'm a machinist. I'm retired now. I'm a machinist. And towards the end of my career, of course, I was working at the highest end of my ability.
Sure.
And people would say, "How do you do this?" And I always tell people, I used to tell them all the time, amateurs never make mistakes. Professionals do.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, each and every one they've made, is you've just, and the thing is, the bottom line is you run out of mistakes. It's not like which one you made. You just run out of ways to screw things up, and now you just get good by attrition.
Yep. I had a sign on my wall for many years that said, "Amateurs teach amateurs to be amateurs."
Yeah, well, I know Steve and I are both the same way in that, you know, folks will come in and say, "Why you charge so much?" It's not that you're paying for our hourly rate. You're paying for our knowledge. We come with years of experience, and that's what you're paying for. Don't worry about the hourly rate and all that type of stuff, because it is what it is, and you're paying for those years of experience that we can even fix it for you.
My favorite is when they say, "Well, my child can do it. My grandchild can do that." Then let your grandchild do it.
I had a lady one time said her grandson could probably fix it for cheaper. I turned around and said, "All right, well, let me know when he fixes it."
Yeah.
And she took it off. A week later, she was back with it.
Yep.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, back in the day.
And that's going to cost twice as much to fix your mistake.
Exactly right.
I used to drive a tow truck way back in an old other life. And that's back in the points era when cars had points and they were just transitioning over. And their cars would conk in the middle of nowhere, and they would say, "Well, what's this going to cost?" "Oh, about three times as much as it would have you just gotten a tune-up you should have had like 3 months ago."
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't know yet. Depends on what mood my boss is in.
That little light on your dashboard didn't come on because it's Christmas. It came on because you need oil.
I know, and my boss needs a boat payment, so, you know, this is not a good week to be breaking down, trust me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right, thanks, Brian.
Oh, you guys are the best, man.
Thanks, have fun.
You know it.
I have to say, I lost my muffler this week.
Uh-oh.
And well, it was kind of nice having that full-throated roar when I was starting to go. But I had it replaced, and I was very happy because it was under warranty.
Oh.
So I paid for labor, and that just made me think of that.
I have a car's extended warranty?
Yeah. Somebody called me. I said, "Sure." No, because, you know, it's a Nissan Cube, and it's 16 years old.
How many thousand miles on it?
99,000.
That's
95,000.
That's still low.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I used to drive for Medical Motors there, our vans, the Dodge Caravans, we wouldn't consider selling them until after they were over 300,000.
Sure, of course.
It's all in the maintenance. That's what people got to realize. You do the regular oil changes and checkups with lubes and everything else, and a car will last you a long, long time.
I had a friend who we were talking to this with the lady at the vet the other day. She said, "We're very religious about," she drives DoorDash. She said, "We're very religious about every 3,000 miles we change the oil." I said, "I have a friend who worked for a company where they would deliver your luggage from the airport to Pavilion, to Leroy, to, you know, wherever. And she changed her oil every 2,000 miles. And that would sometimes be every week."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that car lasted her forever.
Yeah.
Modern cars now, they're saying 5,000 to 7,500.
Yeah.
Especially.
Well, it depends on the brand of oil. Yeah, the brand of oil that you're using, because now they got a lot of these synthetic oils that last a lot longer and can hold up to the heat and wear and tear.
Of course, I had a Chevy Bel Air Three on the Tree. What a great car. And I don't know that I ever changed it. Well, no, I'm sure I did. I just don't remember doing it. But yeah, that's...
I missed my 57 Ford. That had on the Tree with a manual choke and else that's disappeared. There was a button on the floor.
I knew you were going to say that.
That you had to manually hit the high beams for the on and off.
Oh, I thought you were going to mean the starter button that used to be on the floor.
No, this was for the high beams.
High beams.
There was a button there that you had to hit.
I had a car once that had a little leak under the dashboard, and in the winter, ice would build up around that thing. I couldn't turn it on, or if it was on already, I couldn't turn it off without chipping away the ice first.
Well, that's why I can't get over this Ford Escape that I have now. If you're driving down a road and all of a sudden it gets real dark, automatically the high beams come on.
Yeah.
And then if another car comes on, it shuts them down. Yeah. I don't have to touch a thing.
Yeah, we're this close to self-driving cars.
Yeah.
It's a different world. You young whippersnappers, get off my lawn.
going back to the NVMe for a minute, OWC makes a product called the Thunderblade.
The Thunderblade!
It has 12 NVMe slots in it.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow.
The 12 terabyte version, that's the smallest one they make, is $3,000.
Wow.
They make a 96 terabyte version.
Okay.
For $15,000.
Okay, and it's RAID, I'm sure.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
But it can push 6 gigabytes per second.
Holy
throughput
moly.
Over Thunderbolt 5. And they sell it into the video market.
Oh, yeah.
Just listening to a podcast, and a guy was playing with the new Blackmagic immersive camera to make 3D immersive videos.
Yeah.
It's 90 terabytes an hour. And they don't have any drives big enough. So even this not, you know, so now there's a 96 terabyte drive. We can only store an hour's video on it. So they have to record in 5 or 6 minute chunks. It's back into the olden days when you could only have 5 minutes of film in your camera.
Right.
Because that's how big the reel was.
Yep. Yeah, that's amazing.
96 terabytes in a single drive.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
I just got my 3 terabyte drive and I was thrilled.
Yep.
But it's a storage, but you've said this before. You know, it doesn't matter how big the storage is. The programs just keep getting bigger to fill it up. And the data that we keep gets bigger to fill it up. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go too far because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly... Truly, we are grateful to you that we remain solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in a few.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
I think a lot of folks are taking advantage of the weather while it's still somewhat decent outside.
Ish.
Get it done before the snow flies because they're saying...
Up.
But
do not use the S word in here.
That's a four-letter word.
This is the FCC will be down on us.
Oh, what other? I think I don't know whether you guys have seen it, and it's coming to our store that they talked about for quite a while, doing away with pennies.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Production has stopped. But it's going to take a decade for them to disappear.
Uh-oh. They already disappeared from our store.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of places are not taking them now because production has stopped. But they are still. My daughter works for a bank, and they are still taking pennies, and they're still giving out pennies. But once those go out of circulation, there will not be any more. And they're saying the nickel could be next, because they are very expensive to make.
Yeah, nickels are a lot thicker and.
More expensive than the penny was, wasn't it? But the problem now is that if you pay in cash, stores have started doing penny rounding. So if it's 1, 2, or 3 cents, it's supposed to round down to zero, but more and more stores are rounding up to the nearest nickel.
That's what we're doing.
It's getting called the penny tax.
Yeah, right. we're rounding.
So if you pay a credit card, they still charge you the exact tax. What's funny is that other countries have gone through this already. Canada dropped their penny and their dollar bill a long time ago.
Right.
And so now they have a $2 coin.
Right.
And the loony and the toony.
Loony and the toony, and the smallest paper bill is a five.
It costs 3.69 cents to make a penny. It costs 13.78 cents to make a nickel.
Yeah, a lot more material.
And so it isn't until you get to a dime, which only costs 5.76 cents to make a dime, and a quarter only costs 14.68 cents.
Because of the copper in that inside.
Right.
So why is a quarter barely more expensive than a nickel to make?
Because of the copper in between. Right. The nickel is solid material.
It's thicker and it's a solider material.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and so I understand that. I do understand why they're planning on it. But
yeah, I just, I went in, and all of a sudden they said, yep, no more pennies. Okay.
It's a little premature, but yeah.
Adjustment.
Well, and that's, you can still, so it's a gray area right now. It is possible, of course, to continue to spend a penny electronically. So if my thing costs $1.04, then I could pay with my credit card and it would be $1.04. Mm-hmm. Whether they're willing to take that or not, I don't know. But it could still go on. It's only if I pay with cash that somebody would be able to say, no, it's $1.05 now.
They've approved stopping the penny, but it's still in production until next year, according to this article. And there's 116 billion pennies in circulation.
Right. Many of them under my bed.
Mine's in a big water jar, old-fashioned water jar.
Oh, yeah. So mine were rolled because we used to use them at market for the coffee stand, and so they're still, there's this bucket of them under my bed.
Yeah, the old-fashioned water jugs,
ones.
I got one of those. Oh, heck, I must have that at least, 40 years now? Lori found it for me, and I, from that day on, it became my Harley Chrome jar.
Oh, yeah.
So all my change, I got in the habit of never spending any change. It always went into the jar. And then come spring, I'd get it out. My grandson would help me roll the money in that, and it was my Harley money for Chrome. And I'd buy my Chrome for the season.
Yep. When I was a kid, my father did refrigeration repair, and he knew he was in every bar in town. And so he had a lot of tchotchkes from bars. And I had a giant plastic beer bottle that was my penny jar. And I filled that many more than one time and bought all kinds of things.
Well, my grandson at first, when I told him, you help me roll it, and you can keep all the pennies. He goes, well, that's not much. So all of a sudden, the first time he helped me roll, and he wound up with, say, $9 in pennies.
Oh, that's a huge money for a kid, yeah.
He goes, those are all my, I told you could have all the pennies.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't eat. When are we rolling them again, Grandpa?
Yeah, right.
Next year.
According to a Pew survey, about 40% of people never use cash at all. And
rarely.
Yeah, which is interesting because in 2023, 16% of people used cash.
Hmm. Well, with the tap and pay now, I mean, it's so convenient. Well, and it's more secure.
Yeah,
it's more watch. That's
and
what
the,
I keep.
The lower lower limit a lot of stores have is a little frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is. It's so much more secure and convenient to just go over, put your phone there or like your watch or whatever, and get that one transaction to go through without having to pull out a credit card.
I tend to use my watch because I can and it's cool. And I can't tell you how many times people, in their 20s, look at me and say, you can pay with your watch?
Yeah.
Or that won't work. You have Tap to Pay. It will work.
Yeah, you see that little symbol on your machine there?
It tells me it will work. And then last week I got a kid, again, 20 years old. I said, I'm going to pay with my watch. He holds up the little thing, only had it facing toward him. I can't. My wrist doesn't do that. Turn it around. Just hysterical.
Yep.
But yeah, a lot of people are now paying. Tap to Pay is safer. It is more secure. It is harder to steal your credit card number because it uses a one-time number.
It uses a different number. Not all Tap to Pay.
Right.
If you tap your credit card, that uses the credit card number. But if you use a wallet app in Google or Apple, then that uses a random number every time.
And so I use my wallet app. So yeah, it's a whole different world out there with those. I prefer to use my watch for everything.
There's a gas station I go to that had Tap to Pay coming soon on their pumps for like 2 years.
Yeah,
I've seen that. Finally came, and I didn't believe it. I had to try it.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bruce from Fairport, New York. What's up, Bruce?
Hey, I'm trying to install Linux on a MacBook Pro, Kali Linux. And I had a lot of difficulty creating the boot drive.
Okay,
Every time I download the image, the ISO, the name of it is, it ends in AMD 64, even though I'm clicking the x86.
AMD 64 and x86 are the same product now.
Well, really?
Ish.
Because one is Intel and one is ARM, isn't it?
No, that's ARM. That's a separate.
Okay, that's ARM 64. All right,
that's
sorry.
ARM 64, not AMD 64.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry, ARM 64. That's what I'm getting.
Oh, you're getting ARM 64. All right. That's.
And do you have an Apple Silicon-based Mac?
It's a 2017, so it's Intel.
It's Intel. So you're downloading the wrong version. You need to download the Intel version.
And you're downloading Kali?
Kali, but this is what happens. When you're downloading it, they tell you to pick the ISO installer. I click that, and I'm given two choices, the AMD or the Intel. I click the Intel, and when it downloads, it says AMD 64.
Okay,
that is Intel.
Yeah, AMD 64 is the Intel. So, all right, so I'm on the Kali Linux 25.3 download page, and it gives me two choices. x86_64 and Apple Silicon, which is ARM 64.
Okay.
If I click on the x86-64 installer download, just give me the download for Pete's sake. Thank you. And it is and it is giving me the AMD 64. AMD 64 is x86. It used to be that Intel. Okay, so what happened was AMD copied the Intel command set and added one or two things. So for a long time, everybody had two separate installers. And somebody finally said, this is stupid. So what we'll do is we'll have one installer. It'll have the full set of AMD 64 stuff. And if it sees that it's on an Intel x86 chip, it just won't use some of those commands, the commands that don't exist under the x86. But we'll still call it AMD 64 because that's the bigger command set. But that is the correct command set.
Okay. Now, another question. I was using ChatGPT to ask all the questions until I got to talk to you guys. And they claim that there's an issue with the USB for the Linux, the Kali Linux installer, that I have to do another command or something.
Kali Linux is designed for security professionals. It is not designed to be easy to install. It is not designed to be easy to use.
And I'm seeing that it doesn't like Apple's T2 security chip.
Right.
Very well.
So Kali may not be the best choice for an Apple device. Why did you pick Kali in particular?
Some of the OSIN things I was interested in.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that at all.
I have nothing else to do.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that at all.
I'm retired, and I was interested in the OSIN part of it.
In the what part?
I'm not getting OSIN.
No, open source intelligence.
Open source.
Open source, yeah. All Linuxes are open source. And I
The tools.
Oh, the tools. Yeah, the Kali tools, which are designed for security things, penetration testing, and all of that stuff, are easier to use on a Kali system. So, yeah, you can install it. It's just not. It's not designed to be easy. And I'm sorry. I wish I had an easier thing to tell you, but it is designed to be very secure, and that makes it a little more difficult to install.
To work with.
Okay. What are your options?
Well, it depends on what tools you're looking for.
Well, I was specifically looking for the OSIN tools, but if it's going to give me an issue in the learning curve, I'll go somewhere else, I guess.
All right. Many of those tools exist outside of Kali. If you're new to Linux, I would suggest you start with a version of Linux that's easier to install and learn the operating system, play with it, give it a couple of weeks and see how you like it. Many of the tools that you're interested in will be available there, and once you're familiar with the operating system, installing them is pretty easy and easy enough to manage and handle. So the real blockage here is Kali Linux itself.
So something that's easier to install might help.
Yeah, to get your head around that and get comfortable moving around the system and playing with that, you know, and the terminal windows and going in there and doing a lot of typing, you know, as far as commands and that type of stuff, you know, and rearranging stuff and that, and the menu structures are totally different. So that's a learning curve just there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like I said, take baby steps. First get this going, and then you can go into the next one, and then the next. And
what do you recommend?
Yeah, it'll just keep you busy doing all that for the next few years.
An easy Linux to learn is Linux Mint.
Yep.
So that's one that is probably pretty easy to start with. Now, I have to ask another question. The MacBook Pro you're putting it on, does this have the touch bar?
No.
No. Okay, then you win.
Well, the other thing, too, though, even if...
I'm salty about this, and don't you forget it.
You start with, like you suggest, the Mint. That's the beauty of Linux. You don't like that? Well, then, okay, you can put another version over that, Cinnamon or whatever.
Right.
XSFC or...
And many of the tools that are pre-installed under Kali are installable under Mint and any other Linux version.
Yeah.
But Linux Mint itself is much easier to install and get running. I can't tell you the number of machines I put it on, and it's just click, 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 and you're done.
I just posted both the Kali installation steps, which is like 27 pages long.
Yeah.
And the Linux Mint installation step, which is 2 pages.
Yep. So yeah, I would start with, particularly if you're not familiar with Linux.
Yeah. Cause you're, you're looking, you know, like a mile down the road and you haven't even left the starting gate yet.
Yeah.
So first, you know, get us a couple systems, and that's why we've said before, you know, trying to encourage people to put different versions on flash drives. You get yourself a few flash drives, burn the images there, because that's the beauty of Linux, is you can put it in, boot it up. It'll boot slow because it's
very
working
slow
off and, of the. But you can at least get the look and feel of what it's going to look like.
And you have to be careful when you're making your partition. If you want to dual boot Mac and Linux, you want to make sure you make a second partition. If you want to wipe out Mac OS and install Linux, then you can do it on one partition.
Yeah, that's right. My plan is.
Yeah, and most people do that. Most people wipe out Mac because it's back so far on that machine that it's not really particularly secure.
Yeah, well, it's 13 on the Mac.
Yeah. So
another question. Can I make a bootable drive on my MacBook Air for the Intel Mac?
A bootable drive of Linux Mint?
Yeah.
Yes. There's a
Belina Etcher.
Belina Etcher runs on Mac. Of course it does.
Yeah.
There's a program called Belina Etcher.
Link is already there.
Oh, the link is already there. Steve's already put it up. And that's the one I use.
Yeah, same here. I've used that for years. And it's been reliable. They always update it.
It's literally three steps.
Yep.
Pick your image. That's the one you downloaded from Linux Mint.
The ISO, yeah.
Pick your drive. That's the USB drive you just plugged in.
Burn.
Done. Three steps.
Okay.
Yeah, they couldn't make
Thanks
it any easier.
Yep.
Thank you.
Good luck. Let us know how you make out.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, he's trying to put the cart way ahead of the horse before he's even left the gate.
There's nothing wrong with doing a security level OS. But.
Yeah, but...
Right. But Kali was never designed to be used by the average user. It was designed for security professionals.
Yeah, but he's starting from the ground floor, doesn't even know what Linux looks like compared to what his Mac operating system
is. So, it's never a bad idea to pick an easy-to-install Linux like Mint or Ubuntu or, one of those. Mint is awful easy and very pretty, and it looks a lot like a Mac or a Windows machine. So it's an easy entry into the world.
Play around.
Elementary OS looks more like a Mac than the other things, but it's Mint is easy to install, and that's big. So I would go with that. All right, I will read the news. Oh, I like this one. International authorities have dismantled three massive credit card fraud and money laundering networks linked to losses exceeding $344 million and affecting over 4.3 million cardholders across 193 countries. The November 4th joint action, dubbed Operation Chargeback, included investigators from Germany, the USA, Canada, Singapore, Luxembourg, Cyprus, Italy, Spain, and the Netherlands. The operation was led by German prosecutors and the Federal Criminal Police Office and coordinated by Eurojust and Europol. Operation Chargeback targeted 44 suspects, including alleged network operators, payment service providers, intermediaries, and a risk manager who apparently didn't do their job very well, and resulted in the arrest of 18 individuals, including five executives from four major German payment service providers. Google is in the process of purging Assistant across its products, and the next target is Google Maps. Gemini has already begun rolling out in Maps, powering new experiences for navigation, location info, getting lost, and more. This update will eventually completely usurp Google Assistant's hands-free mode role in Maps, but the rollout will take time. Predictably, some people will love it, some people will hate it, and most people won't notice. While the Raspberry Pi Foundation is perfectly happy to continue to support their older hardware, going all the way back to the Raspberry Pi 1, yes, there was a Raspberry Pi 1, the software side isn't so enthusiastic. It turns out that Debian Trixie will be the last OS to support the original Pi, but you've still got a few years until you have to do anything. In fact, the Trixie release notes say it will be supported for the next 5 years, so you've got some time. Microsoft plans to remove Defender application guard from Office by December 2027, because who needs to have their applications defended, starting with the February 2026 release of Office version 2602. The Microsoft Defender application guard for Office is designed for Windows 10 and Windows 11 Enterprise Editions, protecting users' devices by isolating untrusted Word, PowerPoint, and Excel files in a separate container. So those of you using Windows in your business should start being a little more selective on what documents you open, because Windows isn't going to help you anymore.
What are they replacing it with?
Nothing. Nothing. Go ahead, open that document. Shut up.
Jeez.
Speaking of Windows and businesses, an out-of-band security update that patches an actively exploited Windows Server update service vulnerability has broken hot patching on some Windows Server 2025 devices. Yes, a Windows patch has broken Windows patching. Luckily, this is a problem for your sysadmin, not you. And luckily, this sysadmin is retired, but only from the business world. Except for the fact that we're out of time, you could have given us a call. But now you'll have to wait till next week.
Something to think about.
Something to think. You'll have time to think about it. In the meantime, think about anybody who's going to buy one of those new Macs, the Chromebook killers, who would like to loan it to me to put Linux on, make sure it runs on it. I would be happy to do that.
Windows Defender Application Control is being replaced by Microsoft Defender for Endpoint.
Oh, it means you have to have an endpoint server.
Yeah.
Ah, this makes sense now. Okay, there we are. Now you have to have an endpoint server. So one cheap product is now replaced by two expensive products.
Yeah.
Got it. Now it makes sense to me now. All right. That's it. That's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Interesting questions this week. You people never disappoint. It's always good stuff that we get from you, so thank you all. I want to thank Dave Enright for staying awake for most of the show. I want to thank Steve Ray for... I'm Nick Francesco. Poor Steve. I do this to him every week, and he pretends to be amused. But we are done for another week. Thank you all very much. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. And it's right here on the truly great, and again, sincerely, we are truly grateful to you, because with your support, we are solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a short 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?